Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, whose mission is to extend Christian ministry by caring for the whole person, body, mind, and spirit, and by working with others to improve health and quality of life in our communities. Now, here's your host, Ted Dotts.
Hello, I'm Ted Dotts, and welcome to Faith Matters. Today, our guest is Professor Jim Clopton from Texas Tech University. Jim is a psychologist, a man I've gotten to know in part from some of his students that I've run across as a pastor, and they have given me such great compliments about the way he has guided them that I was eager to get him to interview. Jim, if you would you introduce yourself to our listeners?
I'm Jim Clopton, and my wife is Nancy, and the two of us and our kids moved down here 38 years ago. When we came here, we didn't know how long we'd be in Lubbock. It took us a while to identify ourselves as Texans, but now we're very pleased to be here, and I've taught at Texas Tech for 38 years, and Nancy taught at Texas Tech Health Science Center for over 20 and retired a few years ago.
Where did you two come from?
We came from Kansas. We met at the University of Kansas, and when I finished my education, the only jobs I'd interviewed for were in Kansas. We thought we'd stay in Kansas forever. But one cold winter, we decided there got to be someplace warmer than Kansas. And it turned out it was either Oklahoma or Texas. So we headed down here.
So you've been here 38 years. Do you have a sense for this culture as compared to the Kansas culture you grew up in? Any differences you see or things that have struck you?
One thing that I think is that Lubbock has changed in some very positive ways in the last 38 years. When we moved down here, Nancy thought we'd move to the end of the earth. There were blue laws at that time, and there were certain things that could not be purchased on Sundays. We had a new baby, and one time I went to Albertson's grocery store to get a baby bottle, a nipple, and some formula. And I can't remember which one of was, but one of those could not be sold on Sunday, which was a crisis for us with a new baby. And we really thought, what kind of place would we go to where laws motivated by religion prevent us from taking care of our young son? But those are a thing of the past.
Well, they are. I hadn't even thought of the blue laws in a long time. But yes, that experience, I think, was rather common. May I ask you why you've chosen the field of psychology? Why did you do that?
I started college as a math major. I was very good at mathematics when I was in high school. In fact, I completed all three semesters of calculus as a high school student. So I completed quite a bit of college math before I graduated from high school. And so I thought I was a hotshot mathematician. And when I went to the University of Kansas, I quickly found out I wasn't a hotshot. There were a lot of other people that were much better at math than I was. And I realized that math for me was like a big game. It didn't have a whole lot of personal meaning. And so I was searching around for what else to take and decided I wanted to take a history course. Well, the problem that semester was all the history courses I wanted to take were closed. So I thought, well, what am I going to do? And so I was looking around for something to take, and general psychology was open. So I thought, well, then maybe that'll be interesting. And I took that course, and one evening, I remember very clearly, I went to the library. I did all my studying in the library. It was too chaotic and noisy in the dormitory where I lived. So I was in the library, and I was reading Carl Rogers, an essay called This Is Me, where he's talking about personal learnings. And I got so excited that I would read for a while, and then I'd get up and walk around the library. I was so stirred up and excited. And about halfway through, I had to go back to the dorm and tell my roommates how exciting the stuff was that I read. One of the personal learnings that Carl Rogers mentioned was the facts are friendly. That which is true can never be my enemy. What a statement of faith that is.
That which is true can never be my enemy. And you're a college student, and that strikes you. And from that, you did what then?
from that point, I decided to take some more psychology courses. My first reaction was, I want to be a social worker. Psychology courses were required for that, so that would help me get started. But I quickly realized I love psychology, and my first idea was I was going to be an experimental psychologist. But then I had an advisor that said, well, you ought to take a course in the area called clinical psychology, a very popular area. And I said, well, I really don't want to do that. And he said, well, I think it would be good for you. And so I did, and I had a very good professor and a very small class, or eight of us. I got very attracted to the idea of using psychology as a way of helping people.
Jim, may I ask, now that was a pretty directive statement from your advisor. I think you ought to take clinical rather than experimental. How directive are you as a psychologist with people?
Sometimes I give people a lot of freedom to make their own decisions, and sometimes I remember as a counselor, I worked as a counselor here in town for over 20 years, and I remember telling people that mostly I would like to guide them in making their own decisions, but I told them if they were doing the equivalent of driving their car off a cliff, I wouldn't stand by and watch, that I would give them some very direct advice about what not to do.
So there's a clear place for a directive kind of counseling as
yes.
well as the non-directive. Now, you've been teaching students for 38 years or working as a psychological counselor. Is there something you'd say that you'd learned? Like if you were going to tell a young person starting out, here's what I've learned being a psychologist, a clinical psychologist.
One thing that very much concerns me is that a lot of young people today are very anxious. In fact, research would say that they're more anxious now than they were a generation or two ago. We also know that they're smarter. 18-year-olds now are smarter than 18-year-olds when I was 18 or the generation before that. People are getting smarter over time, but our young people are more anxious. There's more depression among young people. And I think partly we got to look at what's going on. Is that physiological? Is it cultural? What's going on? I think one thing that I would say to young people is that they can get too worried about being in a position where there's a risk of just failure unless everything is perfect. And I like to tell people that you can recover from mistakes, that if you don't have everything figured out, that's okay. I like to reassure those people that don't know exactly what their major is in their first year of college that I was there. I thought I knew initially that I was going to be a math major. I ended up being a psychologist.
Jim, you've brought up some really important statements. We will be right back after a quick break. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with Professor Jim Clopton.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotts. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, celebrating Covenant Heart and Vascular Institute. Since 1965, Covenant has brought together cardiac physicians, nurses, and professionals whose sacred mission is compassionate care for every patient. More information is available on cardiac care at 866-4-COVENANT. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotts.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ted Dotts with our guest today, Professor Jim Clopton of Texas Tech University, and he has mentioned two words that I find very important, two concepts. One, he has said our students today are smarter, say, than when he was a student, and number two, he has said our students suffer from more anxiety. Why are our students smarter, or what does that mean for you?
One thing that I think a lot of times when I say that young people are smarter now than we were when they were their age, people are sort of surprised by that. But then a lot of times I'll ask people our age, well, if you have a problem with your cell phone, who do you ask for help? And they say they usually ask their teenager or a college student or someone like that. And I'm saying, well, what does that imply. The reality is that life is a lot more complicated now than it was when we were young. In my house, we had a thermostat, and you moved it up or down to set the temperature. The thermostat, we have two of them in my house now. It's electronic. It has 8 buttons on it. It can be programmed for the day of the week. So at night, it allows the temperature to go up or down in the winter, and it does that automatically. Far more complicated. Our cell phones are complicated. When I was a very young kid, there were no dials on the phone. You just picked up the phone and you talked to an operator. So the complexity of modern life has required people to become more intelligent over time.
Did I hear correctly? Then smarter, at least in part, would mean the skill in handling complex technological things. And that would be the smarter?
Not necessarily having a larger vocabulary or more facts in your head, but it's the ability to deal with abstract problems, even nonverbal problems, to be able to figure out a puzzle, to be able to look at a cell phone you've never seen before and say, well, let's try this. My granddaughters will grab a cell phone and just start working with it, where I want to get out an instruction manual and have someone tell me what to do.
Yeah. Well, what about to say smarter if we shifted the field a little bit, like in interpersonal relations, like smarter in terms of, I think a favorite thing of yours is, why don't you take time to think before you answer? How about smarter in the realm of relationships? How does that compare?
I'm not really sure that there's any evidence that people are smarter in relationships. The evidence is pretty specific to intelligence tests, and even within intelligence tests, it's specific to certain kinds of problems. And one reason we have such good data is intelligence tests are over 100 years old, and some of the tests, a few of them have stayed the same over all those years, so we can see that people are getting better at responding, and the ones that are revised periodically have to be made harder to compensate for the fact that people are smarter. If you want to look really intelligent, take an old intelligence test. It'll make you look really bright.
Well, I don't know of anything like that. Well, let's ask then about anxiety. In the 1960s, when I'm in seminary, we were talking about we lived in an age of anxiety, and theologians were responding to that. Could you talk more about why you think our modern students, say, are in a greater degree of anxiety?
I think that's one of those things that people look at differently and disagree about. I think one factor that's been identified by some psychological researchers that's very real is people now have more choices. And with more choices, people are worried they're going to make the wrong choice. I was talking with a young person recently that had several different options, and she was really worried about it. And I talked with her about the fact that when I was at her point in life, I didn't have that many choices. In some ways, I had to make do with what I had available. I think I'm personally still struggling to understand the anxiety of young people, because in some ways I can get to being a little bit like an old fogey and say, well, they have it a lot easier than I had it when I was their age. But then I think, well, wait a minute, but how does it look from where they are? And like I said before, I think young people nowadays a lot of times feel like if they make a mistake, it's going to doom them. They're going to be stuck with a bad outcome. And I want to say, you can make a mistake. You can take a risk. Nowadays, young people, I find very risk aversive. They don't want to take any risks. And some good things have happened in my life because I've taken risks.
How does a psychologist deal with the risk aversive? Like, I think the very basis of life is taking a risk. That's another word for faith. So when you have a client or a student who is risk aversive, what's your response to that?
One of the things that I tried to do as a counselor, I try to do as a professor, is convey to students that it's safe to be around me. And if I pick up fear and anxiety, I try to do anything I can to lessen that. I had a student recently sent me an email message, and it started out, I'm a little afraid of asking you this question. So I responded to the question, but I also thought, how do I respond in a way that will lessen that fear?
I remember in my own life, some of my professors frightened me, and it was a certain trepidation that I would finally end up making an appointment to visit. And so you have ways of welcoming them or making them feel safe in your presence. Is that also true when you're working with a client? How do you do that? How do you generate an aura of safety for people who come to see you or for students who seek you out?
One thing I try to convey to clients that come in is a sense that they don't have to worry about being with me. I can do that in different ways. I remember one person came in. It was someone who made a lot of mistakes and had a lot of bad things that they had done. And I simply said to the person, there's a lot that we need to talk about, but we don't have to talk about all of it right off the bat. I want you to talk with me about things as you're able, and we'll see where we go.
As you are able. Now, I think that would be a calming statement to someone. Talk to me as you're able. We will be right back after a quick break. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with Professor Jim Clopton.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotts. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, celebrating Covenant Heart and Vascular Institute. Since 1965, Covenant has brought together cardiac physicians, nurses, and professionals whose sacred mission is compassionate care for every patient. More information is available on cardiac care at 866-4-COVENANT. The views, opinions, and comments that are expressed on this program are solely those of the host and guest and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions of KTTZ-FM, Texas Tech Public Media, Texas Tech University, Texas Tech University System, or our faculty and staff, our affiliates, our partners, and our sponsors. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotts.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ted Dotts with our guest today, Professor Jim Clopton. Jim, you are a psychologist, but you also are a very strong church person. I know one work that you're deeply involved in is the care for the homeless. I know that your church invites the homeless in, cares for them, supports agencies and institutions. More than that, I know that you take a whole week and work with volunteers that provide church settings or other setting for homeless people. So would you tell me why you volunteer and why others volunteer for that kind of work, which can be very difficult work?
This goes back to a comment I made earlier in our program about changes I've seen in Lubbock. I don't know if this is a change in Lubbock or a change in my perception of Lubbock, but right now I believe Lubbock is a very compassionate and caring community. That may have been true 38 years ago. It may have been I wasn't as aware of it back then. But I look at what goes on here in Lubbock now, and it makes me filled with pride for our community. We have Tent City, where homeless people reside. Les Burroughs and the people out there do a wonderful job of providing that resource. The South Plains Food Bank is important, not just in Lubbock, but in this region, and the Breedlove Dehydration Plant sends food all over the world. So there's a lot of caring and compassion in Lubbock. And about 15 years ago, there was a meeting at Asbury United Methodist Church. The idea was presented of having a program is called initially the Interfaith Hospitality Network. And the idea would be to take a few families who didn't have a dependable, safe place to live, who were homeless, and provide them temporary assistance so they could get on their feet. And the way it was described in the video that Nancy and I saw just made so much sense that I thought, I want to be a part of that. I want to help out with that. And so Calvin Campbell at our church was the coordinator, and Nancy and I volunteered and stayed overnight on Thursday night. Initially, there were 5 churches. Soon there were 6. So every month and a half on a Thursday night, Nancy and I would stay overnight with 2 or 3 families. And we did that for a number of years. Then we switched into a different church in St. John's now. The church we're at now is also involved and has been from the very start. And it's now called Family Promise. And again, we're helping a few families in a very intensive way. Now I'm the coordinator at St. John's.
Jim, I work every week helping to feed the poor. My experience is that most of the people who come for food or help are not capable of going out and getting a job, although they're often accused or belittled for not working. But I see them, and I think they're not capable of it for the most part. Your homeless people that you see every week or month, do you have some observations, say, from your profession as a psychologist about homeless people?
Well, I don't know how much it comes out of my profession and how much of it comes more out of my experience as a church member. When we look at poor people, there are different sets of individuals. For most people, poverty is a temporary occurrence. Among the U.S. population, 1 in 3 people at one point in that person's life have been poor. My family was poor at one point. It was brief. Soon, things improved greatly for my family. But we also have some people that you touched on that will never be able to get a job, will never be able to take care of themselves, that will always need assistance from the rest of us. And I think we're struggling as a country, as a culture, to decide how to respond appropriately to both sets of poor people, those that simply need temporary way to get a boost up, but also those people that are going to need long-term help.
Jim, you deal, say, with students who are smarter each year. You deal with a large group of students who are anxious. You deal with people who are very poor. What do you get out of this? How does this benefit you, being a teacher, a provider for the poor?
One thing that benefits me is seeing people change. I really do believe that people can change. I believe there's a lot more to us than our worst mistake or our weakest moment. And I've seen some people go through Family Promise and make the program work for them. I've seen some other people that I didn't think would ever be capable of learning to drive, getting a job, that have. I've also seen some people that need a lot of help. And once you adjust to that fact, well, it's hard to describe in words, but it's like there can be a real joy in taking care of those people and saying that how can I help everyone live with as much dignity as possible. My mother had Alzheimer's disease for the last 10 years of her life. She didn't know who any of us were, and we got very little out of her, but we did get some things from our contact with her. So she was somebody that needed to be taken care of, but the taking care of her gave us some joy. It's hard to explain, I think, in some ways.
Very hard to explain, but so beautifully put. Number one, you say we have to trust there's more to us than our own mistakes. Number two, people that we would say no use, we end up benefiting from. Look, you and I both have grandchildren. If we said, now, Jim, as a man that's had all the experience you have had, what's something you hope most for your grandchildren?
I look at some things that are happening now, like the refusal of our government to take action on climate change. I look at some things like that, and I worry that my granddaughters, when they get older, will say to themselves, why didn't my grandparents' generation do a better job at solving that problem?
Jim, thank you. I have that same concern. It's such a huge issue, and one that we tend to ignore, I think, partly because it is so huge. But thank you very much for joining us today. I'm Ted Dotts, and you've been listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with Professor Jim Clopton. All previous shows on KTTZ, you may go to kttz.org and click on 89.1 and Faith Matters to hear all previous shows.
You've been listening to Faith Matters with your host, Ted Dotts. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, working to improve health and quality of life in our communities. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, a service of Texas Tech Public Radio.